looking at what I call the father factor. This little outline is bulletin, it's on a blue sheet of paper that's helpful for following along. And Paul, the Apostle Paul in his letters, would often call on things in life that people knew about. For example, he would talk about Christian life as the race. And they were familiar in Paul's time with the games in Rome and how they were races. And so he would use something like that. Or he'd talk about the thing that, like a farmer, he planted seed and he has to wait. And one's faith doesn't mature instantly, but it takes time. And so he would use pictures or word pictures or ideas, metaphors that people would know. He said the kingdom of God was his life, and then he would fill in the story. Jesus as well, pictures that people would understand. He talked about the 99 sheep and how the shepherd would go up and find that one. People would relate to that. They understand. Well, today we're looking at a passage where Paul calls on the idea of what it means to be a father. And even in his day and age, it's really no different than today. And in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, we're going to discover some aspects of fatherhood that Paul drew upon to describe his own ministry. Because he realizes that as a pastor, as a missionary, that he cares for people to come to faith. And so he thinks of this in all of us. It's in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, starting in verse 10. You are witnesses, and so is God, how holy, righteous, and blameless you are among you who believe. Talking about his way of life, how he conducted himself, along with those folks that were with him, in terms of how they related to people. And verse 11 says, you know that we dealt with dignity as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God, and all of you into his kingdom. So in this handful of verses, he gives us some insight into what it means to be a father. Now let me begin by saying there are no perfect fathers. I remember sharing with somebody at a lunchtime. We wanted to get together and talk about parenting in the afternoon. I remember sitting down with them and was kind of a late lunch. And we started to talk, and they were asking me questions about parenting, and it's something I remembered, but it dropped me like son. So I had to say, I have to go, I got to pick up my son. So write that down. So if there are no perfect fathers, when you become a dad, you're never really sure of what you're getting into. This is on-the-job training. And for most of us guys, you're getting to a challenge of fatherhood that lasts a lifetime. Because you learn all the way. As I would tell my kids, at least the first two, when we were little, I would say, I've never had a 12-year-old son before. I had to come up with something else for the next two. But with the first two, I'd always say, I've never had a child at this age before when I'm learning. For example, our oldest, Wendy. Her birth was very quick, easy, everything under control, doctor's care. And as most of you know, they tell you that no matter how long the birth is, if you have a child, if you have a second child, fairly close to that, you might find that very fine attack. Wendy was born within 2 hours of Diane's water breaking. So, I did the calculation from a little math, and I figured, well, that gives me an hour. So we have to be ready. Well, we were at a tie party, actually, and the woman came in and she said, the woman comes in and the surprise party before, and we got a surprise! So we go, I'm thinking 45 minutes, and so, an hour. So we rush out the door, and we were later told that one of the girls there, about 8, 9 years old, said to our friend, can we stay up and find out what to do? And And our friend, he put it there in the bottom, said, "We'll know what it is." So he had offered up in the hospital. I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but suffice it to say, a guy was in the labor room, and there were two nurses there. I affectionately referred to them as Laurel and Martin. And it was like their first day, and they were, and I was saying, you know, I was saying, this nurse said, "Kyle, I'm putting the nerve pad in my back, like I don't know anything. I've never done this before." And I said, "Well, let's go down out there, it's going to be fine." And then one of the nurses goes over to inspect what's going on, and she goes, and says to my wife, "This is a person who's a trained medical person. And, you know, supposedly is seeing films or something. And so she knows what's going on." And she says this to my wife. "Keep your legs together." And I'm thinking, I know better than that. And I am saying, "No, I think this is more now." Of course, when the surgery came in, I went to this room and she had a hand up to the water and told me that she didn't want to go down. Well, I said to the nurses, "Go look for a doctor in the hospital. This is the Long Beach Memorial Hospital. This is a good thing for us. Is there a doctor in the hospital?" The nurse looked at me and said, "No." And the way you know, what if someone starts to die? There's not even one doctor in the whole hospital? Well, long story short, our son grew in the and his nurse and I delivered it more than this conference. And, but she didn't have the leg that broke on her. That was basically the difference. And we were born, and I was shocked because all our friends were having either all girls or all boys, but I didn't have a girl thing. And I was shocked, and Diana, you know, her head was through. And she says, "What is it?" And so we were just, you know, we ended up with four children. And our motto became four and no more. But we love being good parents. And as I said, in this passage, Paul is effective. And the first is that a father walks with his children. He uses the words encouraging or exhorting, depending on the translation that we have. And it means to call from one side, invite, appeal. The same word is used of the Holy Spirit. When Jesus says, "I will give you a comforter who will come alongside you," that's the same word. It's to encourage. You need to encourage to walk with me with your children. Because that's how you find out who they are. And I like to say there's two keys to this process. And the first is the extensive time to do time. You've got to know your children from an early age in order to learn how to parent them. What are you doing? What's fun for Diane and I right now is we have three grandchildren and they're growing up into their personality. They're growing up into them, what they're going to be like, and it's so fun to watch that and to see it happen because it brings us memories of what our kids were. Early on, our oldest, Wendy, always wrote textbooks. She read very early. She would read books and just flash right through them. And she'd be 4 or 5 years old, she'd just read books she loved. And I think, I mean, it's just before we go to the library and we pick out books by the way. What's the biggest book you have? We want that. We don't care what it's about, we just want that book. And we get a stack of books at the beginning of summer, and the library, and they say, "Oh, this is for a summer reading, and it's a summer reading." All back on the weekend. That was her. Our son was different. Drew was much different. And not because I said you have to do this or boy, but from the get-go, he was against football, he was against soccer ball, he always wanted to throw the ball. And so you have to walk with the child to get to know who they are. can't lump them together. You never use a phrase, but I'm more like your. You can't say that. Because they're uniquely themselves. And I'm strength with them into the insight you need to understand their spirit. The spirit of this person that God has placed in you. Here's a sad truth. There are approximately 72,000 to 75,000 children in the United States under 18 years of age. And tonight, 32% of those or more will be one bed in a home without a biological father. That is unfair. They have nobody to walk with them. They have no one to encourage or exhort them. There was a story of a little boy whose dad came into the room and he wanted to talk to him. The little boy says to him, says, "Dad, if I give you all the money for my food bank, what are you going to spend it with?" He said, "You've got the money. You've got things to do." And this little boy was willing to give him $8.74 to his dad just to buy the time. I give that to you. People say, "Well, it's quality time, not quantity time." Well, that's not true. Quantity of time works as well. And I understood that. And that's why I put my kids out on Monday to mobile, go camping, I do different things to get away from time to for the lunch with them, and especially when they're small, it was great that you could do it with McDonald's. Their cake brought you to the open. But I can remember just sitting there, especially one of them now, living here, and this one was just I give them a breakfast for the go, and this is the next 45 minutes. About what's going on in this field of mind. But that was what? That was what? So, encouraging and supporting comes with. There's that second thing, the need for connection. Connecting. Dad has to create time for connection. As I mentioned, I was born on tape with my cooking, no agenda, and just talk. Just whatever they want to talk about. Trying to find out what's going on in their mind. What are they thinking about? And you can learn a lot from this. And you earn the right to encourage them by doing this, these two things go together. You begin to find out how they're wired, how they're trying to get together. And I've learned a number of lessons from my kids. One was from my two sons. They're 7 years apart, and told us, and they're from Western. And so I did similar things with them at similar ages. For example, when Drew was about 7 or 8 years old, I got him a baseball glove and went out the backyard and he played catch. And I threw a ball and threw a few catches to the glove. Throw the ball to the glove. Great. He was a textbook athlete. He had a good time. 7 years later, Weston came out the backyard, bought him a glove, we threw him a ball. I threw him a ball, he catches it, and he said, "Did you see how the ball came in? I lowered my glove like this, my hand, and my cutting gun like this." I'm sitting there thinking, "Just throw the ball back! That's all you do, that's your good. Throw it back." And he throws it back, "Okay, here you go, Weston." And then he'd explain again. Everything on himself, I'm thinking, and you learn that. And I learned that as a dad, they taught that to me. In their own way. For example, so you come alongside your children and you learn about it. In fact, in Deuteronomy 6:7, Moses writes to his children, "Impress them," talking about God's law, "impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up." It's not a lecture, it's just time to spend and connect with them. That doesn't happen automatically. It's not like when the child is born, you dad to back it up on them. It's not like when your child is born, automatically the parenting hormones kicks in. What did I learn from my parents that was positive? What did I pick up from them that would be negative? And how can I get that out of my interaction with my children? And I made mistakes. I didn't think to look back on the world. Other things kind of happened. And I did good things too. But those, that was because I desire to learn and understand what it means to spend time with them and be connected. You can come alongside the children and you'll be able to build Moses' growth in that group that I just mentioned. That's how we earn the right to encourage them in teachable moments in our lives. You know, situations happen. The father wants. The father is also safe to be with. Paul used the word comforting. He's that word comforting. That means to calm, to remain in place. Not talking about consistency. It means to wait or console. Here's the aspect of being there emotionally. Our culture being figure that sort of says, wait for your father to come. Dad for them that he starts to eat. And this certainly undermines that concept of comfort or a calming pleasure, a presence of spirit. Dad is to be steady. We know what to expect. I have a cousin, about 2 months older than I am, and he grew up fairly close to him. And his dad, my uncle, was an alcoholic. And certainly his life before he came to faith later. And I knew the story that for my cousin, when dad was coming home, he didn't know what he was doing. And dad gone out as a local guy, had a few drinks, and he comes home, and my uncle was not a nice uncle. But dad was going to come home. So he never did anything. That's the opposite of what Paul's talking about. This idea of comfort is that there's a steadiness, there's a certainty you can count on death. He remains in place. And what demonstrates that is the idea of what I might call or say, please pay attention to that. Much of the dad's interaction with children is utilitarian. Please pass the salt, clean the room, mow the lawn. James Dobson, the author, has concluded this. Every lifestyle is the primary reason for the breakdown of the family.
What's happening in their lives?
Do you know? Who are their friends? Do you know that are their friends? If they come to your house, they're going to lose your house and go somewhere else. I can remember one of the best old things that we had to do with my mom. Way back in the wonderful period of the great business, when I started surfing, she would put my surfing magazine, my surfing magazine, she knew. So she knew who my heroes were, and who the heroes were to my friends who were surfing with me. And she would drive us to the beach, rock us off, and go surfing, and I just thought, now, that's an amazing step of faith. Here, son, I'm going to drop you off the team. You're going to paddle out in the ocean where there's places that can eat you. And I'll come back later and make up or what's left. And so she would drive to the beach. And while she was driving to the beach, she would say to my friends and myself, well, do you think Jordan Bell is the best person in the world? That's true. And my friends were shocked. They didn't know anything about what these guys really were. And her ability to see you. She paid attention. She paid attention. And she was involved. Like for me, I'm not a Buddhist guy. Some people are. They do Buddhism. My youngest son is Zen master of Buddhism. People come over and watch him play. I will once in a while go in to the camera and watch him play. I have no idea. But I'll ask questions. What's the goal? Are you trying to get you? Is that a bad guy or a good guy? What is going on? I just sit and I ask this question. Because I want to get into video games? No. That's what I'm talking about. I'm terrible here. But I just spend that time. So, it's paying attention to what your children are doing in their life. Another aspect of comforting is allowing the child to grow. Remember, we had our wall one time, our phrase that said, we give our children roots and connections. Roots we can get good at, and we can get good at.
My daughter said,
"Really, Dad?" And then she said, "Your other members of the class." But to give them room to complain, that's how some parents can do that. Some parents might have a child who's 22 years old and they still have three families who are 12 and living in the home. That does not create an atmosphere where the child really wants to come and interact with people. It means to give, to empower them, to give authority to them, and to tell them we can do it and then let them be home. And this is great news to a child with a need. Our oldest again, Wendy, for some reason, and I don't know, something showed around here, she would always climb on it. She'd be in the house, she'd climb up on the stairs, be up on the cabinet, and jump off. And I thought, oh, she's going to be our character. She just knew that. But she was going to climb, she was only holding it in, she'd climb up on the tree in our backyard. I remember one time, we were camping with a bunch of families, we all had kids about the same age, and Wendy was probably 5 or 6, maybe 7, and we're all camping, and there's lots of trees, and Wendy goes to the tree and starts climbing. And Wendy gets up about 15, 20 feet in the air, and I'm just sitting by the campfire, and there's lots of branches, and I don't see them. Other kids go over and start to climb up the tree, they only try to get like 10 feet off the ground. And then one little girl goes and starts climbing the tree, and her dad yells, he says, "Sally, get down from there!" And his wife looks at me and says, "You see, in that situation, there was a sense that I don't want my own daughter to try to do this." And when he was up on the tree, and he climbed down from the tree, and giving them that freedom. They need to know you're there for them, and they need to know that you know they can do it. There's a story, but our father carried 50 for his money. This is a quote. Fatherhood is pretending the present. Fatherhood is pretending the present you love the most is someone alone. That's from Bill Conti. There's that calm presence in the family that you affirm them, you encourage them. And so a father walks with his children, and a father you see. Then thirdly, a father tells the truth about life. Notice the word Paul uses, imploring and urging them to live lives that are the truth. This word meaning a call to witness, to declare, affirm, or give witness. A dad does this when he, first of all, speaks the truth. You deal with questions in an age-appropriate way, whatever the situation might be. Children need to know fathers who will let them know when they are heading down the unhealthy path to sit down and dialogue with each one. Not just say, "Because." That is not the ultimate answer. "Why can't I do this?" "Because." That doesn't help. But to sit down and interact with them. We're not seeking to be their friend, we're seeking to be their parent. We are stewards of our children, we do not own them. I love the line in Psalm 127, where it says, "Children are like arrows in the hand of a warrior." I love that line. It's like verse 3 or 4. And if you think about that, if you think about that day and age, they didn't go down to Big Five and buy a quiver of arrows. They had to make them. They had to find the right wood, they had to find something to hone that wood with to make that arrow shaft straight, they had to find the tip and make that out of rock, they had to tie it on, they had to find a bird or find feathers to put on the back arrow. It took a long time to make this one arrow. It wasn't like easy to use, it was fun. And the beauty of that word picture that they can use here is that it's a process. It's something that happens all the time. But yet, warriors are skilled at making arrows because they're warriors. You don't want an arrow that you have no idea where it's going to go and you can use it off the string. "Well, I hope it hits that guy. You know, all over the place." No, they have to be accurate. They're in a battle. And they want to win. They don't want to die, so their arrows have to fly away. So, Danny uses that metaphor, that word picture. Children are like arrows. That makes him need. He said, it is Diane and I, shape our children with her home, who is the essence of fiery man. And so what I did is important to me, even though I did it to you as well, I sought to speak the truth to you all. The second thing in terms of urging and imploring was the idea of be skillful in discipline. Not one size fits all. Children are automatically the wise that are wise. Some are compliant and others are strong willed. We have one of our children who is the strongest in the child of God. Maybe some that are equal, no one, no one. I started trying to think, how do I discipline this child? And we tried many things. One of the ideas I thought I'd read about is called poison. You take that significant toy away from them, and you get away from them and say, oh, you're a toy, you're stuck down, or whatever it was, and poison it. When you behave correctly, and you behave right, you become me and get the toy out of poison. Well, for this child, those toys are rotting in jail for the day. She is so strong, well, she'd never come back. She's like, please help, not be back. No, as far as she's going to rot. I'm not. That was her. It didn't work. I had to try and think of different ways that Diane and I both did. And so, it's always different. Always. Mark Twain made this observation. Mark Twain wrote, when I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand and have the old man around. But, when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in the 70s. Remember that. That's very, very true. You will move from a traditional parent to a consultant. And you first and foremost to the core and implore them and believe them as Paul said. And what I mean by that is you become a consultant. You stop offering them advice because they will resent it. When they come into a situation they're not sure of, you're not always talking to them and giving them advice from your perspective. And they'll probably come to you and say, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And that's true. And it's hard for me as a dad because sometimes I see what's happening and I just want to say, you know what, this would be good. But my wife very simply says, don't be mad. And where did this come from? So you move from being a traditional parent to being a dad. So father tells the truth about God. And then finally, the father sees the big picture. There's the joy of the moment. Paul says to live lives worthy of God. Live lives worthy of God. That's just a phrase to meditate on. How do I do that in my life? Are you in yours? How do I live a life worthy of God? The importance of children seeing their dad live their lives that way is significant. As I learned a long time ago, the truth is better taught than taught. How do you do it? You won't do this perfectly. We can get help from others who are maybe farther down the road than we are in this experience with being a father. And maybe you need to get some help to a young guy who's a new dad. We all have insights to share. There's that joy in living a life worthy of God right in the moment. Joy of the moment. Father sees that. And then second of all, there's the joy of the future. Paul puts it this way. He calls the kingdom his kingdom in glory. There's a coming kingdom in glory. And Paul says, God calls you to that. He's calling you to that. There's an end to this process. Live a life knowing that your life is going somewhere. It isn't meaningless. Father sees that too. David in Psalm 68, at the end of your outline, like the ultimate promise to all of us. A father to the father, I'm speaking of God, a father to the father, fatherless, a defender of your ways, is God. He is holy God. He sets the lonely in his hands. Okay, that's the lonely. My parents passed away when I was 27 years old. And so my children never had that side of my family with my grandparents. They had Diane's father. And so one time when we were in Yosemite City, that was close to California, we met this woman who had just lost her husband. She died of cancer. And we had, for some reason, connected. There was a great connection. And her name is Betty, and we just started hanging out with her, and we had actually adopted her as my grandma. And she adopted us as her family, and our kids as her family. She had one son that was in no love, and hardly ever saw him, because she didn't have a real father to go to the daughter. And so we granted to my mother, and our kids, and we were able to have a grandma and father. Went from the same bloodline, she was not the grandma she was. And that's the beauty of this whole idea of being a father. You can be that to someone else. Long after your kids have grown up and gone and have no lives, yeah, you see them, but you know, that's what you're going to want. That there's other people that need you in their lives because of the experiences and the gifts that you can learn to have. Well, since this is Father's Day, I will give only one last bit of input. And I think this is probably one of the best pieces of advice that I ever learned. I learned this years ago. The best thing a father can do for his children is love them. I trust that talking about the father's path, we're reminded